Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Controlling transmission.
Divided by a thousand miles of barren wasteland, two men mysteriously linked by alien technology on a podcasting mission to boldly deliver video game news and views directly to your brain. This is Gaming Uncensored. Now, your Gaming Uncensored guides, the dynamic duo, the video game gurus, a man on wheels, and a Yeti with a modem, Jamie and Tommy.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. How you doing? My name is Jamie Jordan, and this is an overstimulated episode of Gaming Uncensored, and we'll talk to you about that in a little bit. We got lots and lots and lots of things going on. We are scrambling for dear life to play every game that we need to play. I was talking to Duff a couple days ago, and he was like, "This, you need to weigh this." And I was like, "I have no more bandwidth. I'm out."
Yep.
Tommy sitting over there. What's up, man?
Just buried under everything at this point. So, trying to keep my head above water. I'm really excited, honestly, because work life has been nuts for about the past month, and it's subsiding. For church job, got through Easter and Holy Week, and so that was a whole lot for the teaching job. Finals are next week, and so things are lightening up, which means I might be able to catch up slightly on some gaming. I don't know if it'll be much, but I'm going to try.
You're not going to catch up because
never going to catch up. I've got no chance of ever catching up.
I've been trying to keep my fingers in everything for both of us, and it's virtually impossible.
Yeah,
I was pretty sick for about a week, and you know what happens when you get sick. And so I spent more time playing some games, and I'm still fine. There is no way we will ever catch up.
No,
we're going to talk about all of that in a little bit, but before we get to that, we got to say thanks to the Patreon guys.
Yes. Cabbage, Jose, Narc, Duff, Josh, Hector, Spider, Spencer, Kavash, Chad, Zeke, Chris, Brigham, Sam, Andrew, Luik, Logan, Liz, Jordan, Gio, and Derek. Thank you all for your support. We appreciate that a ton. If you would like to support us on the show, go by the website, gaminguncensored.com. If you haven't been there recently, you'll notice this right now. It looks a little bit different. We're working on that. Transferred host, we got all that stuff going. It's great, but we need to update some stuff behind the scenes. And so currently, there is not a Become a Patron button there. But you can just go to Patreon and look us up, too. That works just fine. But that'll be back shortly. And so if you want to support us, of course, we'd love for you to support us. GamingUncensored.com to check out everything else.
Yes. And we will use your money to play actual games. There are two games that I'm going to talk about today that I feel like we're playing them both on Game Pass.
Yep.
But I feel like for the reasons that we're going to chat about in a minute, I feel like they are an absolutely necessary purchase. And so we will be spending some money in the next couple of weeks.
For sure.
To pick up a couple of really, really, really awesome games.
Yes.
So we would love to have your money because this show's expensive.
Yes. And Switch 2 right around the corner.
Yes.
So we gotta be prepared for that as well because we're gonna try to get one. We don't know. Maybe it'll happen. I did not, just to put this out there, did not get the pre-order email yet. Most people have not, because apparently demand was so high. Nintendo had no clue. Right. But we're waiting to see if we get that pre-order email at some point. They are back. That's a change from last time we did a show. The pre-orders were halted last time we were here. They're back. It's still happening-ish. Got some price increases we'll talk about here in a little bit, but not the major, at least on the Nintendo side. We've got some other price increases we'll talk about here in a bit. Economy's crazy, man. Stuff's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. but let's face it, it's been weird for about the last 20 years. It's just weird. Yes, so
for sure.
That kind of is what it is. There is a lot of stuff going on, which we would love to talk about, but I want to start with games, because for sure. I've been playing games, you've been playing games, and we got lots and lots and lots to discuss.
Yes.
So should we get right in?
We should. Yeah. I'll let you start, because you've gotten into more than I have the past few weeks. I've touched a little bit of what you've been doing, so we'll be able to have some good conversation around it.
Well, I gotta tell you, I guess I've lost my mind, because there's so many new games out there that we need to be playing them. But what did I do? I downloaded a 20-year-old remaster.
Yes,
and started playing it, and I looked up day before yesterday, and the clock said 19 hours and 35 minutes. And I went, holy cow.
Nice.
And of course, I'm talking about Oblivion Remastered, which is ridiculous. It's great. And I'm not the only one that feels this way. I've seen videos from multiple people talking about it. It the only thing I can say to you, like, we can spend an entire show talking about Oblivion Remastered. We're not going to. The best thing I could possibly say to you is that it just feels good. It feels like it would feel if you and I hadn't talked for a year and a half and decided to get back together. That's what the feeling is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I have some mixed feelings about it.
Oh, really?
But I will say, just generally, I agree. It's great. It's well done. The remaster is. It feels good, I think, is the biggest thing. It also looks good. It's not like blowing your mind graphic fidelity wise, but it's an obvious upgrade.
I will say this. Have you looked at a comparison? Because I felt the same way until I really started looking.
Right.
It's a massive upgrade.
It's a massive upgrade from the game 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hold, like, it's not competitive with modern games. It's competitive with modern games, but it's not like a top tier modern game. Right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's way more pretty than it was 20 years ago, as you would hope. Right. It should be. Also, just looking at that game from 20 years ago, that was pretty great 20 years ago. Like, that game looked good when it came out, which is not a surprise either. But all that to say, like, it looks good. It plays well. It feels good. It scratches an itch. It's something we talk about a lot. But here's my thing, and this is going to get into a show note thing that we weren't even anticipating here, but it's worthy bringing it up, because it somewhat gets to my, like, reticence with Oblivion. And it's this thing that we talk about all the time. If we had all the time in the world, this is a game that would get a lot more of my time. I've put a couple hours into it. You know, I've done the intro section, I've went out and explored the world a little bit and got to the city and, you know, like, just doing the kind of basic getting around stuff. And again, like, the world's great. It looks great. I really enjoy it. But the big but for me is it does feel like a 20-year-old game. Like, it's just a game that, like, the mechanics of the game, the gameplay elements, all that stuff, is from 20 years ago. And that's not necessarily a bad thing insofar as I play plenty of games that are either 20 years old or more than that. I come back to nostalgic games all the time, or playing games that are very much like built off of those same things. But when my time is really, really limited, I don't know that I can justify putting a whole lot more time into Oblivion when I just don't have a whole lot of time to put into games. And something like the next game we're going to talk about needs way more of my time than Oblivion does. Even though we didn't really play that much of Oblivion. You and I both talked about this. Like, we played Skyrim to death. And so, like, obviously, we've had Skyrim being updated every way through official channels and mods and everything else for the past 15 years or whatever it's been. I don't feel any need to revisit Skyrim at this point. But Oblivion, because I never spent that much time in it, it's one that I'm like, oh, yeah, I really should spend some time in this. But if I'm having to choose between that and something that just came out that's more modern and feels newer in a way, like,
okay,
I might get back to Oblivion. I just don't see myself taking time into it.
Can we just make this as simple as possible? I should not have put 20 hours into it.
Sure.
It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what I told Cabbage. I'm not playing it straight up. The reason that I'm having fun with it is that I'm using every exploit that I can find, meaning that there are some aspects of the game, like the arena, that I never played. There's an arena in the city and I never played. And if I had to play that straight up, I would lose. Like, I have no shot. But it has that Knights of the Old Republic mechanic where you can bring up the inventory in the middle of the fight and it pauses the game and I can take a potion and, like, so, yeah, it's cheap. Yeah, it's obnoxious, but I really don't care.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it like, let me put this as simply as I possibly can. You are correct. This is a 20-year-old game, which pretty much everybody on the internet has already played.
Right.
So I don't feel bad about trolling it. Right now, it's for the experience.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, it's not about playing the game straight up. Yeah. And so I think that's why I'm having a good time with it. I wasn't going to mention this because I really do feel like a dweeb for doing this, but I stumbled onto an exploit that they didn't patch out that I don't think existed in the original game. You can use any container in the game to duplicate whatever you want in your inventory.
Yeah.
And it's really, really simple. And so part of the reason that I survived the arena at least this far is because when I went in, I was carrying 200 health potions.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be able to create those at level 10 or whatever.
Right.
And so I feel like a kid with a canvas, just like throwing paint on the canvas and just doing things. And it's really fun.
Yeah, this is one of the things I really love about this remaster. Is it's just pure fan service. Like, that's there. It doesn't feel like, at least from my perspective, they're marketing this to anybody who's never played Oblivion before. They're not like saying, hey, come check out this game from you might have missed when you were younger, whatever it is. They're like, hey, you played this game, come back and play it. It's prettier now. And we've basically left everything else the same way that you know and love. And so exploits like that, because the item regeneration bug is a thing that exists in the original game. The, like, weird, like, dialogue things, glitches, that kind of stuff. Like, they left almost everything in like that. That they could have obviously fixed. Like, they know what all those things are. They're famous. Like, you can find memes of them all over the internet. Like, it's not like anybody's under any impression that these things aren't there. But they said, no, we're going to have this as much like the that original experience that you thought it was cool to be able to go in and make 200 health potions. We're going to give you the ability still to go in and make 200 health potions or whatever else it is, you know, of have this interaction right. with this character that's super weird and glitchy, like, and you remember that from when you played it before. We want you to experience that again. And I really like that, like, from the perspective of doing a remaster where you have the opportunity to, quote unquote, fix a lot of the rough edges of the game, but saying, no, that's part of the charm. That's part of what made this game as popular as it was. And so we're going to keep those things in there. I love that they did that.
Yeah. And you add mods on top of that, which that's the other reason that I played around with it, because I just figured out this week, I can't believe that I didn't Google. But if you are using PC Game Pass, I don't think it's possible on the console. I don't see how it would be possible on the console. But if you are using PC Game Pass, manual installation of mods works exactly the same way it does if you were modding on Steam. So I have currently 4 mods running. They're all quality of life mods, like realistic weights and that kind of thing. Like, I didn't want to completely nerf it. Like, there's mods out there that are like, you don't have to deal with weight. And right. I didn't want to get that lame with it. Like, but I did want it to be slightly more realistic. So I added that, and I added a few other things. And it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And the only reason that I'm probably going to spend some money and get the game on Steam is because I believe that Virtuous, who actually did this remaster, deserves that money.
Sure.
I mean, it's let's talk about this. We're going to talk about pricing a lot on this show for the next 40 minutes or so. Right. this game's $50, right? I probably would have been happier if it was $35-$40, but considering what we're about to talk about for the next little while, a $50 remaster that looks in place like this, yeah, you guys probably deserve my money. So I'm probably going to throw down a little money.
Yeah.
Just because they deserve it.
Yeah, I get that, and I appreciate that. I would not for this, especially $50. I mean, like, that feels really high for a remaster for me. Again, the brilliance of it to me is that it's on Game Pass, and so I don't have to make that choice.
And the thing is, I'll probably talk myself out of it because...
Or wait till it goes on sale, because it'll ultimately be on sale on Steam soon. So
it's technically a Microsoft first-party game, which means that it's probably not ever going to leave Game Pass.
Right.
But that's one of those games that you don't have to worry about it going somewhere.
Knock on wood. you would think, but weirder things have happened. So, well, but yes, for the foreseeable future, it's going to be available on Game Pass.
And considering how the Blizzard guys feel, like, I don't think they have any say in it, but like, there's already been some stuff said. And some of those guys aren't real happy, and we'll get to that. You never know what's gonna happen. And I as much as I love Game Pass, the thing that I get in trouble with Game Pass is I don't really want to get real deep into something. I don't want to get, you know, 150 hours into something like Baldur's Gate 3,
yeah,
and then figure out, oh, it's going away. And no, yep. Now what do I do? What do I do with my saves? How do I move those over? Which, by the way, there are ways to get that done. I have also figured out this week, but like, that's part of the reason to me, Game Pass is a test bed, right? Like, I play these games for this show on Game Pass, and then if it's good, I'm going to throw down some money on Steam, because really, Steam is my preference. I mean, Game Pass is great, but Steam is my preference.
Sure.
But
I mean, it's apples and oranges, because Steam you pay a la carte for Game Passes. Like, that's the whole thing.
Right.
Rationale. But for me, I don't disagree. I something like, especially like the next game we're going to talk about, that's trickier because of that. But something like Indiana Jones to me is like a perfect Game Pass game. Because it's not super long. It's not something that I'm going to be invested in for years, right? Like, I'm going to have a really good time for a couple of months. Right. And so, like, that makes all the sense in the world. I don't need to go pick that up. Even though, again, we've talked about how much we've enjoyed that game. And we are supporting the developers by playing their game. They get, you know, benefits off of our time that we spend in that game in Game Pass. It is a different thing than buying the title outright. And I totally get that. And totally support somebody going, yeah, I'm going to give them money because I feel like they deserve money. And we've done that before with other titles, and we'll do that in the future. But I definitely don't feel like that for every game that I play on Game Pass. I have any obligation to go, okay, I liked your game, so I'm going to give you more money on top of what I'm already giving to Game Pass. You're getting licensing fees from Microsoft for this, or are part of Microsoft in the case of Bethesda and Indiana Jones and all the Oblivion, Skyrim, all that kind of stuff. Like, you're already there. You're already part of this ecosystem. And so you're benefiting from being part of that ecosystem. And so it's it's just a different world. It's the same thing with music that we've talked about a lot too. It's a weird place. And music has like different ways, right, that you could go and give artists money as opposed to just buying their music. You can buy their merch. You can go see them and see them live. Gaming isn't quite that easy. And so it's a little weirder to try to figure out how to give that support in other ways other than so going, okay, I have access to your game without paying for it extra. I'm paying for it because I'm paying for Game Pass, but without paying extra. But that seems a little redundant. Unless there's been the other big benefit to me about Oblivion. And again, if I had more time to spend with it, why I would be really tempted to pick it up on Steam is to have more freedom in modding. I love the fact that you can mod it on the Game Pass version, which isn't true for every Game Pass game. There's some Game Pass games that don't have any ability to get mods too. Makes good sense that stuff from Bethesda does. But I would much rather have a mod manager ability. I'd much rather have that deeper control over all that stuff that you get with a standalone install of the game that's not through Game Pass's portal. If I were going to spend a lot more time in Oblivion, I would definitely be tempted to purchase it on sale because I don't think it's worth $50 personally. Right. But I don't think most people do, because I think most people are probably just playing it on Game Pass. Like, I think honestly that's where they're going to get most of their traction. But all that said, it's great. I love that it exists, and I wish I had more time to give to it, but I just don't. Real quick, I'll mention the tweet, because we had talked about teased this a couple times. So Mike Ybarra, used to be at Blizzard, said, quote, "I'm skeptical about 20-year-old remasters. What was once fantastic, now remastered, will never hold up against modern masterpieces like Elden Ring. The bar has simply moved from safe open-world RPGs to what Elden Ring brought us all. I would love to be proven wrong, but I'm not."
Okay, too. I have issues with this, right? Because first, what does the phrase safe open world RPG mean? What is that?
And what Oblivion was not 20 years ago was a safe open world RPG. Like, you can say it is today because we have developed, narrative storytelling, game design, world design, all that stuff a lot in 20 years, as we well should. If you had released Oblivion as it is today as a new standalone game, it would feel out of place. But that's not what you're getting it for. Like, that's not what anybody is going out there picking up this game for. They're picking it up for nostalgia purposes. And so, that to me, that's the one part in this, like, that I really say, that's a dumb critique. Like,
I can't stand that. Like, it's the most trollish thing to say, because it's like, well, I really wish I had thought of this idea, but I didn't. So I'm just gonna trash it on social media because I can.
Yeah.
I yeah. that's my problem with it. Now, he does have a valid point about modern gaming because of I don't put Elden Ring where he puts it because, and Cabbage is going to have a stroke as I say this. He's going to start blowing up my phone today after he hears this. I'm still not that impressed with Elden Ring. Like, it's all right. It's all right. Yeah. I mean, like, it's okay. We're going to spend a significant amount of the next 20 minutes talking about a game that I'm really impressed with 2 hours in, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen there. But, like, how Elden Ring became the bar for the modern game, I don't understand.
Yeah, we've talked about this a ton, so there's no purpose of belaboring it yet again. It's not our thing. I get that it's a big thing. I get that, like, I get its influence on modern gaming for sure. There are things about Elden Ring in particular and the Souls-like genre generally that I find clunky and awkward, in part because it's not our thing and we haven't spent that time of getting well adjusted to it. But that said, like, Elden Ring from a world design standpoint is a whole different world than what Oblivion is. Sure. Again, it's 20 years later. Of course it is. It should be. Yeah. Like, that's the part that, like, yeah. But to his point of, is a game that came out this year, last year, 2 years ago, probably overall a better experience than Oblivion that came out 2 years ago? Of course. And that's perfectly valid. Does that mean that going back and revisiting Oblivion isn't crazy fun because it's nostalgia? And this game, when it came out, was Elden Ring, was whatever. Yeah. You know, like, it was mind-blowing at the time. Like, I Morrowind before it, Oblivion, Skyrim, like, that series of titles, just each one was like, oh my God, this is crazy. I didn't know games could do this.
I don't know if you've done a lot of YouTube scrolling. I don't know if you've really done a lot of research since Oblivion came out. There are people playing it right now that played it when they were kids, just like we did, that feel that way today. Like, they're like, man, I really miss this because it's doing some things that I don't see in games today. It's, and I've heard more than one person say that.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's nostalgia in the best way possible, and that's not a bad thing. In fact, it sells a billion games every year. Everybody loves nostalgia, and so, That part of the argument, like, if I could only play modern games, I'm going to play modern games, even though I love classic stuff. But there's a place for this, and to be like, we shouldn't be spending time on this kind of stuff, like, which is kind of the undertone of what he's getting at, is that this is kind of a waste of time to go back and remaster something like that. Like, forget you, man. Like, there's a whole lot of good nostalgia that still exists in the gaming world, and we want to be able to revisit and recapture that.
And I just have to say this. The reason that remakes are happening is because you guys can't come up with enough original ideas. Like that, that's the thing, is that remakes are happening in movies and video games and all of that stuff because it's easy to take this IP that we have and update it and re-release it, and every game is doing it now. We're gonna talk about The Last of Us before the end of the show. There's been like 18,000 re-releases of The Last of Us, right? It's because even somebody like Naughty Dog is like, yeah, we can put out one really solid title every 5 to 10 years. Other than that, this is what we have to do.
Right. But I'm going to take issue with one kind of point, maybe not explicit point that you made. I don't think it's the developer's fault. I mean, fault lies all around. So it's not exclusively the developer's fault in that they can't come up with new ideas. I think it's more on consumers that when given the option to go for something new or something we know, we tend to go for something we know. Well, and that's where they make money. And so it's not that they can't come up with new ideas. They put out new ideas often, and they don't catch because of, you know, consumers wanting something that's more familiar. So I would put the blame more on consumers just in that little part of
Here's my argument on that. I posted an Oblivion video from a guy that I can't remember his name, but he's been popping up on YouTube a lot. And he's our age. He's a troll. He's one of those gaming journalists that's been around forever. And he's talking about the fact that he likes that Oblivion's $50 when we've got $80 games out there now.
Right.
And basically what he said is that this next game that we're going to talk about, which I swear we're going to get to in the next 2 minutes, he's really impressed by this next game we're going to talk about because it's a game that cannot be made in the gaming studio system right now because it's a machine. It's what can we do to make the game that makes the most money possible? And from a major studio like an EA or something like that, you're not going to get a game like this. We're not completely.
I haven't seen the video, so I don't have any context on this. But if that guy is both saying the reason I love Oblivion and the reason I love Clair Obscur, the game we're going to talk about here in just a second, is because they're outside of the machine. That's ridiculous about Oblivion.
No,
right? Okay.
No, Oblivion. I just want to make sure I get this. Absolutely, Oblivion is absolutely. He loves Oblivion for the different reasons that it was made.
But that's a $50 game to make money off of nostalgia. That's right. A machine game. Like
I'll grant you that. You're 100% right.
Yeah.
And one
otherwise, I don't generally disagree, but I think it's driven by consumers as much as it's driven by the public.
Right. But we're just gonna go to it because we can debate this all day long.
Yes.
Expedition 33 is what we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes. Okay, so this is Cabbage's fault. Okay, this is all Cabbage's fault. I was very happy with the games that I had on my system. I had moved some stuff around. I'm watching stuff on YouTube, which I don't know when we're going to talk about that. But I've got a lot of stuff going on right now. And Cabbage says, this game is really great. And I'm like, okay, I'll get to it. And he's like, no, man, it's really good. And so I start looking around, and I see some things that I don't know if they're true or not. Like, it maybe has the highest score of any game on Metacritic ever.
That's not true.
I don't know if that's true.
It's easy. It's the highest rated game so far this year.
But so anyway, I download the thing and I start messing around with it. And in like 2 to 10 minutes, I'm like, yeah, this is something different. This is something different. And so I stop playing the game, do more research, figure out that it's from a team of 30 former Ubisoft devs that broke off and went on their own, and this is what we got. And this game is taking the internet by storm. And I haven't played enough of it to really comment on, you know, some things that I really love about it. Like I'm about 30 seconds away from being done with the prologue. That's where I'm at. but I will say that I'm smart enough we've been doing this long enough that I can look at something and go, yeah, this is going to be in the running for game of the year.
Yeah.
And it may be one of the top 100 games ever made by the time it's over.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah, I'm way too early on the second point. The first point, you're absolutely right. It's going to be a game of the year contender, I think, just for, again, from what I've read about people who have actually played through it. I've played about as much as you have, just played through the intro sequence. But it's outside. This is going back to what we're talking about just a bit ago. It's outside of the expectations of what like modern gaming is. And that makes it feel fresh while at the same time also has so many nostalgic gameplay mechanics specifically that I'm like, oh, I already get this. Like, this is something that appeals to me personally, because the first battle sequence, when it's showing you the timeline over on the side of the screen, I go, Final Fantasy X. I love that. That's great. That's where, you know, the first time I ever experienced that. And it does pull from like Persona, kind of how, what I love about it is it feels Persona-ish in its execution, but it's not the anime style at all, which I just don't really like. And I know right. I would love the Persona games. I've really enjoyed playing 10 hours of Persona 5, and I would love to get back to it again. It's just one of those games that's on the queue and probably will never get revisited, and I wish it could. But like, it has that same kind of turn-based, like modern turn-based mechanic, right. And also this kind of nostalgic feel to it. And then it's in this world that I haven't ever experienced before. I've never played a French game, you know? Like, I'm trying to think right. of, like, what game have I ever played that has, like, this French aesthetic to it? And that's super cool. It's got, like, a little bit of Bioshock 3 feel to it. It has a little bit of, like, steampunkness to it. It has, like, this, I don't know. But it just was super captivating within 20 minutes, like you said. I'm just is something that deserves our time.
And can we talk about, you do music for a living. Like that's your thing. You teach people how to produce music for a living. And like, part of what is getting me with this is that I fire up the game, and in the first 5 minutes, I'm like, holy crap, this score is good.
Yeah.
The sound is awesome. Like, it's very, very, very well done. I'm gonna use a word that doesn't fit, but I can't think of another word right now. It has a sophistication to it in the audio that you don't hear in games a lot. And that probably got me more than anything else. Like, the reason I haven't played more of it is because of the way the battle system is set up. They tried to modernize it, and they have quick time events on both offense and defense.
Yeah.
And I have it on the easiest setting, and I'm not getting smoked. But I can't. I've been trying to figure out how to get the timing exact for the parrying, and I can't get it.
Yeah.
And so I downloaded a mod to like slow it down, and it's still not slow enough. And so I don't know that I'm realistically going to be able to play this. And so I sent you a text, and I said, I think I have the next game after Rebirth, because I don't know that I'm going to be able to get through this, and we have to.
Yeah.
We haven't played enough of it to really talk about it. But here's the other point I want to make. We just spent 20 minutes talking about a $50 game. This is a brand new game. It's $50.
That's amazing.
Right?
Oblivion at $50? Dumb. Expedition 33 at $50? Brilliant.
I was going to talk to you about this before I went off and did it. But, like, I want to get this game on Steam tomorrow, because they are, or at the show, because they need our money. Like I'll transfer the saves or restart or whatever, because I feel like this is a purchase.
Yeah, if we're gonna stream it, I'll pick it up on a PlayStation 5 and I'll stream it from the PlayStation 5 because right, an easier way.
And they're gonna get
our money.
We can talk about that. We don't have to stream. I feel like we should.
Yeah.
Because I really don't know that I'm going to be able to manage it.
Yeah.
Even with mods. It does have mods. And I have a couple of them installed. They've already got ultra wide support with mods.
Nice.
And there is a timing mod for the QuickTime events, but I need to get one that slows it down even more because it's still too fast for my crippled self. And if we get to talk to these guys, I want to say, just so it's on the recording for posterity, I don't have a problem with what they did with the battle system. I think it's great. The problem is, because of my physical limitations, when I'm in a battle, I'm too worried about where my fingers are on the keyboard to hit the button correctly, and so I miss what is going on the screen.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know how you fix it. I understand what they're trying to do. I understand they're trying to modernize turn-based RPGs. I get it. But from a physical standpoint, it's really hard to do.
Yeah, that's fair. Accessibility options have become a bigger deal in games over the past several years, and we love to see that progressing. Maybe especially with modding, there's some options that will make it more doable. And I hope, because I really want you to have the experience of playing the game, not just watching the game, but the fact that it's a smaller team. Again, these are industry vets. It's not like people that haven't ever done anything, but this is the first game that this team has released. It doesn't feel like AAA publisher release. Like, it feels indie-ish. Not in a bad way. I'm not saying that pejoratively, but it feels like the way that the like dialogue system works, and you still have to click through and that kind of stuff. Like, there's just little things like that that I actually find quite charming about it, that I like, but don't feel quite as modern as, you know, other games that we've talked about, which is what it is. But it does give you that feel. It also, when you say it's a $50 game, they could sell it for more. But the fact that it's a $50 game makes it feel like it fits that price point in its design elements, and it way overshoots in its execution, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which, we've played very little of it. We may get into it and go, okay, we're kind of burned out on this. But that's not what I'm hearing from people.
I read reviews. I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. I think we're going to sit down to play, both of us, and be like, we don't have time for this, but we can't stop playing it because this is the best game this year.
Yeah, if one of the best games of the year is a turn-based RPG, like, that's us, man. That's who we are.
When I sent you a text, I wish you could have seen the look on my face, because I fired it up, I played 15 minutes, and I sent you a text that literally said, yeah, with an ellipsis, you're going to have to play this. Yeah. Because I was like, I'm shaking my head going, we don't have time for this. I can't believe I'm about to send him the text, because we don't have, but that's, it's us.
Yes, it is absolutely 100%. And so we're going to play it, because it's a game that's really right at our sweet spot. I'm super pumped about it. Again, I'm eating crow too, because we saw this, like, we've seen previews about this game a couple of times. The last time we saw a preview on it, I just was like, I don't get it. Like, it just doesn't have that much appeal to me. Like, it's, you know, an RPG, and that's cool. We want more RPGs out there, but I just didn't have any interest really in how it was shown off. But getting into the world, experiencing just like the principle of like this idea of the Gromming and like this, like everybody disappears at a certain age and like all this stuff that I'm sure they told us, but until we're playing it, like it just hits different. Like I'm like, oh, now I'm super intrigued by this world.
Well,
which I didn't get before, and that's okay, but like now I get it. And so good on them.
That's the thing is I think there's a lot of, and what I keep hearing online is there is this game is going to grab you, and when it grabs you, it's not going to let you go because this is not a cookie cutter. Go do this, go do this, go do this, and here's what happens in the story. There are some very, very emotional, very, very, very tough elements.
Yeah.
In this game that you really, in some aspects, it's not a whole lot of fun emotionally. Like I got to that point with the Gumar and it happened and I was like, wait, did I just see what I think I saw? And I had to go look it up, like, because I was like, did this just happen the way that I think it happened? Like, because I wasn't sure. I'm like, are they in a simulation? Is it like, how did these people just disappear?
Yeah.
And it's really creepy because there's just all over the world, and I'm saying this not having left the prologue, so right. I'm excited to see what happens. But at least in the prologue, there's crap piled everywhere.
Yeah,
like there's stuff, there's flowers, because apparently there was a 67 years ago, which is when all of this started. There was a much larger population,
right?
And now these people are just gone.
Yeah,
and so it's going to be a very gripping experience.
Yeah. You had mentioned the music and the like piano score that happens in that moment. It's just amazing. Like, it's just so well done. Just, yeah, they've so far nailed it. Again, we've seen so little of it, but you're going to hear a lot more about it because we're both going to be spending more time in it because it's very, very cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That said, we do have some news. We mentioned a lot of it is price related. So that's always fun stuff to talk about. And specifically, prices going up on stuff. Like, I don't have any, like, prices are cheaper on anything in the show notes. Everything is more expensive. The Nintendo stuff I'll mention just really briefly because it happened a couple weeks ago. Kind of all that got resolved from last time we had a conversation. The price of the Switch 2 is remaining the same as it was announced, at least for the time being. Of course, that can change, which we will see here in just a second. Evidence from Microsoft. But the Switch 2 console price is the same. Accessory prices have gone up a little bit. So, like, controllers are like $10 more expensive. Game prices are the same as what they announced, but they were already high. And so that's not a big surprise that they didn't go up more because that they were already elevated. And so Microsoft, though, announced that the Xbox prices are also increasing. Now, a note on this. This is a console that's been out for 5 years. Which is a little wild to see price increases like this on a console that's been out for 5 years, as opposed to seeing some level of price cuts. And so just really quickly, I'll hit not this whole list. You can see this whole list at the show notes, but the Xbox Series S, so the streaming box for all intents and purposes, the more limited of the two, the terabyte model is going to be $430, up from $350. So that's a pretty hefty price tag increase. The Series X digital version is up to $550 from $450, so $100 more for that. Same for the standard Series S, X with the disk drive, up to $600 from $500. And then the controllers are going up like $10. And again, that's not a big surprise. We saw that with the other stuff, a couple other ones. And and this is no shocker here, but Xbox game releases are going to be base price at $80, just like we saw with Mario Kart announced at the Nintendo press conference. And so it is where we are. Prices are going up. But what's really shocking to me in this is that it's prices going up on a console that isn't improved from when it released 5 years ago. And that's just something I don't have. I'm sure it's happened in the history of gaming at some point, but that's not something that I have context for, of the price increasing on a console that's been out for 5 years. Like, we always see these incremental, like, $50 drops, like holiday season. Hey, slice $50 off the cost, go buy one for your kid kind of thing. This is explicitly for the holidays going to be $100 more expensive for an Xbox than it is right now. Go buy an Xbox if you want one before the price hikes hit everywhere. They might have already, I don't know when these go into effect, but that's the crazy part to me, that they're hiking prices on a five-year-old console.
And my, I'm trying to figure out the reason for it, because I didn't want an Xbox before this. I certainly don't want one now.
Yeah.
Okay. So we can talk about, of course, everybody on the internet, economy, tariffs, the whole thing.
And what I mean?
I'm not gonna spend a whole lot of time on that, because that's valid, but at the same time, like, you guys have been eating the cost of the hardware since the Xbox Series X has been out. Don't tell me that you need more money because you can't afford to make it, because you haven't made any money on what's already there. And like you said, there's no upgrades, there's no, and what gets me is the games. And somebody else made this point. Why are the prices of digital products going up?
Yeah.
Well, I understand physical copies. I understand those have to be printed. You have to do things. You got box art, you got all of that stuff. But on a digital product, which is 98% of right. what we're doing now, how are you mentally justifying, yeah, we're going to hike this? From my perspective, and you're always more well thought out than me, and so I'm going to say what I'm going to say, and then I'm going to let you refute it, because you will. To me, it's just like, okay, yeah, Nintendo did that, so now we can hike our stuff, and it'll be okay, and people yeah. will just accept it. And like I said, for the physical stuff, fine, whatever. I understand that. For the digital releases, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, so here's my refutation of that. Is that a word? I don't know if that's a word. The $80 games were inevitable, right?
Well, like, yeah,
it's
but...
just price inflation. Like, it is, like, again, inflation adjusted, games are relatively cheap right now. Not the cheapest that they've ever been, but relatively cheap compared to the history of what games cost versus what normal income is or whatever. And so we were due for a game price increase kind of across the board. Nintendo, shockingly, that did not see that being the company that was going to come out with this first. But Nintendo was the company that came out first and said, we have $80 games, which, you know, gives the permission structure to Sony and Microsoft. Sony's not far behind. We're going to see this from Sony any day now. But give Sony and Microsoft that freedom to go, yeah, we're doing it too. But yeah. Somebody was going to do it, and it was going to happen within like this window of time. The fact that Nintendo had a new console coming out knew that they could leverage that and kind of justify the price increase. I get it. But I'm not, again, so upset about that fact. Even like the fact that like digital games and physical games cost the same is, you know, we can have that conversation. But if anything, digital games should cost like $10 more or something like that. Physical games should cost like $10
yeah.
more. Not digital games cost $10 less, if that makes sense. Whatever the base price is going to be the base price for digital games. Physical games should have a price added on to them because of the cost of manufacturing.
Right, as opposed to, right.
You but, get what I'm saying.
But I get what you're saying, but let me ask you this. Why do you feel that way? Because the other side of that argument is almost everything is digital now. Nobody is doing
right. What I'm saying is that there's just a base price of what a game is, right? like a game has a base price, that's now $80. If you're going to buy a physical copy of that game, which costs a little bit more to produce, there should be an added value, an added cost on top of that, as opposed to a discount for a digital game, because that's not where people get their games anymore. The base cost that we're talking about, it's semantics, I know that. But because everything almost is bought digitally, not, you know, I would say.
So basically what you're saying is because digital is the new normal, the price is what it is. And, yes. And you know, anything above that, that gets
priced. And what I'm paying for is the experience that I'm getting from that game, not how that game is being delivered to me, right? Like, I don't care insofar as I care at all about, you know, how I'm getting that game installed on my system. How it gets there, digital's more accessible, that's great. But I don't think it should be cheaper because it does have a physical cost to it. I think a physical game should be more expensive. Again, I know it's semantics, but just to say, like, if $80 is how much a game costs, that's how much it costs in its digital format now, because that's how games exist.
The industry would love you, and this is why you're more successful than
do you think I'm wrong on that?
I think that's some marketing spin that really works for what they're trying to achieve, which, let me be clear, we said this the last couple of shows, I'll say it again, I'm a diehard capitalist, okay? The goal of capitalism is to make as much money as you can make and be successful. And so I'm not saying I necessarily have a problem with this. What I'm saying is that my issue is, okay, we're doing it because of this. Now, just say this is the new price. This is what it is.
To that point, what are they saying they're increasing the games to $80 for?
I've seen various reasons.
Right.
I've seen economy. I've seen tariffs. I've seen.
I don't think you're going to find Nintendo saying tariffs is the reason that the game price is going up. Microsoft is absolutely going to say tariffs is the reason the hardware cost is going up. And there's justification to that. Xboxes are made in China, as is a ton of stuff. And I'm sure they're looking to try to make Xboxes in other places right now, because China tariffs right now are nuts. Yeah,
they're not
good. But
that's
going to change and whatever. But, like, absolutely, Microsoft can say, look, we've got 150% tariff on, you know, bringing these boxes over from China. We've got to do something with that. That makes sense. But I don't think they're saying that about the game cost. The game costs were just due. Like, they're just, and I haven't seen anybody justifying it in any specific way. I mean, there might be. But, like, games are just, like, they need to be a little bit more expensive because inflation, you know, and that's legit. Okay. Like, let me say inflation specifically, and this isn't microeconomic, that's not the right term, but this isn't inflation over the past, like, year or two. This is inflation over, you know, 3 or 4 decades. Like, things just get more expensive. It costs more to get a Happy Meal at McDonald's than it did 20 years ago.
And I don't.
A whole lot more money than we did 20 years. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just how things work.
I'm not arguing with anything you just said because you're right. But the issue, basically what we're talking about is a first world problem.
Yes.
Okay. Like we're two white guys that are talking about a first world problem.
Yes.
All right. And that's so you're right. From a business standpoint, my family owns businesses. Your family is involved with businesses. Like, this is just how business works. Stuff goes up. I'm not arguing that, you know, from a first world perspective, that this should not happen, because it's the way it is. Prices go up. Like, your salary has gone up multiple times because you got 2 degrees to facilitate that. You may have gotten a third while I wasn't looking. Like, that's just what happens. What I'm saying is, is that you and I are in a very unique place, and most people in the United States, not everybody, but a lot of people in the United States are in a very unique place because this is a first world problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like this is like, if we're talking about getting, if we're talking about getting products to a middle-class family, like I have come to the conclusion, and you can again refute me on this. You and I came from a lower middle-class family, both of us, right?
Yeah, I personally, I came from a quite poor family when I was young.
I've become
upper middle class, and incredibly grateful for that.
And I would even say, like, because there was, I'll just tell the story. I've not ever said this on the air, but Mom and I were talking about this the other day. I'm probably overstating it because there were several times when I was growing up where my mom had to decide between shoes and groceries.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like it was one or the other. It wasn't both. And so I'm right there with you. My family was very much poor in the same way.
Yeah. We're fortunate to be where we are.
We're not that anymore.
Correct.
I don't consider us even to be upper middle class at this point. Like we're both of us are almost to the point that a lot of people might consider us wealthy.
Sure.
In a lot of ways. And I think the only reason that we're there, and I'm only going to speak for myself, is by the grace of God.
Sure.
Like that's all it is. It's by the grace of God and what he chose to give me, because I don't think I did enough to earn what I've got. So my point is, everything that we're talking about is apples and oranges, that there are families out there that these price hikes really make a difference. And I'm not saying that it needs to change for them, but I think we need to be clear about that.
Yes.
That when you say something to the effect of, well, 80 bucks is just the price of a new game, and that's just the way it is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a first world perspective.
Right. But the ability to buy video games in the first place is a first world perspective,
that's
too.
True.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Everything we're talking about here is in the context of, like, whatever. Like, this is my progressive coming out now. Make video games more expensive, make groceries a whole lot cheaper. You know, like, I'm perfectly fine with that because I have the ability to pay for video games. And, I, you know, like, there's ways we could get into that. Otherwise, I'm not trying to get down that rabbit trail right now. But, like, this isn't a necessity that we need. But this is a way, and this is where, to me, the justifying going to an $80 price point for the software, this is a world where people are making their livings, right? Making these games. There are a whole bunch of people that are employed making these games, and that also needs to be reflected as inflationary trends move along. And again, this is big, you know, over decades. Like, those people making the games need to make more money because everything else is more expensive. Their groceries are more expensive. And so the way that they make more money is by the company making more money, by the games being more expensive. And we could talk about, like, where that money gets divvied up and, like, you know, wealth inequality, all that kind of stuff that gets into all that we're not going to get into right now. But that's a reality of just how the process works. Like, it's not just simply like, The boss at the company is making more money. He certainly is. And there are, you know, again, a different conversation around that. But the people that are making the games are also making more money than they were 20 years ago. And that has to be reflected in the cost of the games. And groceries cost more than they did 20 years ago. And so that has to be reflected in what those people are getting paid, and so on and so forth. And so everything you said, totally valid. And you know, me as a kid, I didn't ever own games. We've talked about this before. I rented everything I played for many, many years because I didn't have money. I had a couple of games. I won't say I never owned any games, but like I got a N64 with Ocarina of Time. And like that was a game that I owned, you know, like that was my game. And it was really precious to me because it's just not something that happened that I
owned. Because it's what that like that it wasn't. Neither one of us had money to say that there's a new game out there. I'm going to go pick it up.
Yeah.
And it's very much a lower because I didn't realize what we were doing back in the day, every single weekend, spending $3 to rent a game. Like we probably would have been smarter to go and make some purchases, but the internet wasn't out there. You didn't have reviews like you do now. Like it's very much a rental is like, yeah, you can and it's cheaper, but we're gonna get you in the long run. But at the point where we were, like we didn't know that was all we could do. Like you couldn't go out and spend $40 on a game, $50 on a game. Like if I got two games a year and those two games total were $100, that was a good year.
Yeah, for sure. Right. And like, that's a thing that's worth noting here. Not that there's anything to really do about it, but just that economy doesn't exist anymore for people growing up like us that had that accessibility to rentals. There's other ways that, you know, we just have cheaper game options. You have, you know, games like Fortnite and Minecraft and those kind of things that just go on forever. That like, I feel like, you know, I played a million games when I was a kid because I rented them all. I didn't have to buy them. And so if a game sucked, I just took it back. If it didn't suck, I tried to like be real strategic and trying to like keep my save on it, you know, or whatever. Right. Because like everything was.
Yeah. Because you had to get the same copy.
You had to get the same one. I had a really good relationship with Doug. I remember his name to this day. The guy that was the manager at our local video store, which was called Black Star before it turned into All Star Video. He and I were buds because I could say, man, I don't have money to re-rent this right now, but I really don't want to lose my save. Could you like stash this in the back or behind something or whatever so I could get this specific cartridge, you know? And like he would do me a solid and get me like my cartridge back so I could get my, you know, like stuff like that. So anyway, all that to say, we had a very different experience of what kids, I say that generally now, are going through today. There are different ways that economy looks, but regardless, we want everybody to be able to access video games. We love video games. I think they're a great thing, and there are multiple ways of accessing them now, but $80 video games are a reality that was coming, is now, for all intents and purposes here. We're going to see that going forward, and we'll see. By the way, this just broke this morning, so it's not even in show notes, but Grand Theft Auto 6 has been delayed. I know. Big shocker there. Nobody
surprise,
saw that.
Surprise, surprise!
May 26th of 2026 is now the release date for Grand Theft Auto 5. Six, thank you. I did not think that was going to be a $100 game when we talked about that story. That was kind of ridiculous. And it was kind of a Trojan horse to make $80 games more palatable. And that's how we talked about it. And now here we are with $80 games. But the fact that we're already here with everything else being $80, I'm looking at Grand Theft Auto going, it might be a $100 game. It's a game that's like 15 plus years in the making. Like it's crazy how long we've been waiting for Grand Theft Auto 6. Like,
and I brought this up 20 minutes ago when I was talking about re-releases. Grand Theft Auto 5 has been re-released 18 times. Like seriously, like 18 times. And that's because the cost of Grand Theft Auto 6 when it comes out and we get the numbers are going to be absurd.
Yeah.
And that's why going back to Expedition 33, I need to do a little more research on the budget that they had, but it wasn't anywhere near what the budget of Grand Theft Auto 6 is. And I'm not sure that it's not going to end up being a better game all the way around.
We'll see.
I'm not trashing Grand Theft Auto because we love Grand Theft Auto. It's great. It's fabulous. I need to get into it more. I need to play Grand Theft Auto 5. But the budget is going to be absurd.
Right. It's going to be more bang for your buck, obviously, because Grand Theft Auto 5 or 6 is going to have the craziest budget, maybe of any game we've ever seen. But it's also going to sell a billion more copies because it's Grand Theft Auto and it's very established and it's more mainstream and all this stuff, even though it's, you know, super mature title, it's still way more mainstream. We'll get to that when we get to that. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm fascinated to see what that launch price is going to be.
Can we be straight up and be honest? I don't believe this new date.
I'm like, Grand Theft Auto is one of those games that, like, I'll believe its release day on the day it releases.
Yeah.
And up until that point, then who knows? We'll see. I'll believe that game exists in a release format the day that it's released and not a second before.
Yeah.
All that said, there are some shows we didn't get to. We got off on lots of other good stuff, which is great. Don't mind that at all. So go by gaminguncensored.com. Check those out. I'll mention just a handful of releases. There's been a ton of releases since last we were here. Clair Obscur Expedition 33, of course, has a 92 on Metacritic currently, which is highest rated game so far this year, is going to be Game of the Year contender, I think, pretty clearly at this point. Oblivion is an 82, pretty solid for a remaster there. Indiana Jones is officially out on the PS5, and so if you haven't got a chance to play Indiana Jones yet because you didn't have a Microsoft platform to do that, you can now do that on PlayStation 5 again. Super fun game.
There are some issues there we don't have time to talk about, but we will at some point.
Yeah.
Because there were some issues with that release.
But it's still there. You can go pick it up. It's solid game, as we talked about before. There's something I'm missing. There's one more game in here somewhere I'm missing. I don't remember what it is now off the top of my head. But there's been a lot that's released since last we did a show, because it was a long time since we last did a show. So
yeah.
All that said, go by the show notes, check out stuff we missed over there. We will try to be back sooner. Hopefully now that schedules are letting up a little bit, that'll make life a little bit easier. And in the meantime, be playing some RPGs, because we still got to finish Final Fantasy VII. Logan was trolling me on the YouTube stream the other day of, you're still playing this game? Like, yep, still here.
Duff said that. He's still playing that.
I know.
And
that game is long, man. I didn't know how long that game was going to be. So
can we be real honest? We've said multiple times that your clock is not accurate. There's no way that your clock is accurate.
Not even close.
But I did the math. I bet that you legit have 120 hours in it. I bet 30 hours of that is paused, but I'm gonna bet you have about 120 hours in it,
which is way more than I ever anticipated putting into that game. Not that I mind at all, because it's fantastic. We've talked about it a ton, obviously, but still enjoying the heck out of it. We got to such a cool moment recently, and then it's brilliant. But now I want to go play Expedition 33 so bad. I'm like, I gotta get this finished. So
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on. I've been playing a lot of stuff that I did not bring up. I'll bring that up later as I get closer to the end on some of that stuff. I have worked my way through one massive title that I felt like we needed to finish, and I'm so glad that I did. And I'm working my way through another one right now, which we will talk about later.
For sure.
Let me just put it to you this way. I've spent so much time getting through a couple of titles on our backlog on the YouTube that I invested money to go commercial free.
Nice.
and I think I'm going to upgrade that and pay for an entire year.
Nice.
Because I feel like I can justify that for this show. So
that's
I'm having a good time. We'll talk about all that stuff later. Because I did get through one big thing, which was The Last of Us 2, which we can talk about at some other point. But before we wrap up, do you want to talk about the TV show right now, or do we want to do that later?
We'll save most of it because obviously it's still happening. But I will. I just want to say, because I teased this, I think, on the last episode that we did, because the last episode we did was before the first episode came out. And now there's three episodes out. The twist, and I think everybody knows, but spoiler here, obviously, but anybody listening to the show, not a spoiler. Joel dying was not what Lana anticipated. And so she was pretty devastated.
Yeah.
By that, the moment right before it was gonna happen, like, I kind of put my hand on her leg, you know, or whatever, and she was like, what's happening? I was like, oh. And she's like, no, this isn't what's happening. And I'm like, yeah. So it devastated her the way that it devastated us when it happened to us 5-6 years ago, whatever it was. And so it was fun to experience that moment with her. So far I think they've done a really good job with it. Again, we'll get more into the details of it, but
I think you're more forgiving on it than I will be, and we'll get to that as we get close to the end.
They have deviated a lot.
Yeah. it's what I will say is that it is, you always hear about an adaptation of something. This movie or TV show is an adaptation of a book or a video game or whatever. This show is the definition to me of an adaptation.
Yeah.
I don't like it as much as I want to like it, but that's because I just spent 40 hours of my life going through the video game, which is the original content. And in my mind, we can discuss more about it later, and we will. But like, that's the content. Like, that's
of course, source material is almost always better.
Yes, and I feel that way, and so I don't think the TV show is getting a fair shake from me, because I just went through the source material, but I mean, it's all right. and like I said, we'll talk about that more
for sure.
But like, I think that has a lot to do with the way that I feel about it.
Yeah. And that's totally valid.
Yeah. So with all of that to say, we've got a lot to talk about. We will be back pretty soon, we hope, because I don't want to take another month off.
Yeah.
Especially when we've got Expedition 33 on the plate. Thank you. We love you, Cabbage. Also, you suck. because we don't have time to do this. But with that being said, is there anything else, sir?
I think we're good.
If you would like to send us a segment, you can. GamingOnSister@gmail.com or the voicemail line at
509-GAME-210.
You record it, we will play it. We've got lots of other things going on with the new server, and lots of upgrades and fun things that I hope we can get rolling here in the next little while. But for right now, I believe that is it. This has been another episode of Gaming Unsistered. I'm Jamie, that's Tommy. We are Gaming Unsistered, and we are out.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.